Are you looking to take your media strategy to the next level and make an impact with millions of customers? Walmart Connect harnesses the massive reach of America's number one retailer. They can help you connect more meaningfully with Walmart's 139 million weekly online and in-store customers to find the right audience for your message. They use Walmart's proprietary customer purchase data to help you precisely target even niche audiences at scale. Visit walmartconnect.com today to see how they can help you find the customers you want at the scale you need. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Banking and Payment Show, a Behind the Numbers podcast from eMarketer, made possible today by Walmart Connect. Today is April 9th, 2024. I'm Rob Rubin, Head of Business Development at eMarketer and your host. Today, we're going to discuss the crypto renaissance. And for this conversation, I invited analysts Grace Broadbent and Tyler Van Dyke back to discuss why there's been a comeback and our outlook for the future. Hi there. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Rob. Happy to be here.
Yeah, great to be back.
Yeah, it's happy to have you back too. I wanted to ask you guys a question because we're talking about crypto. And that's, do you have any or do you have friends who have had some real personal experiences with crypto?
I unfortunately got sucked in the 2020 crypto spike, bought about like $200-$300 worth of it. Right now, it's just about even. I've made no money on it, basically, made like very small increments, but I'm just sitting on it because you never know.
You never
and
know.
The off chance it reaches 100,000, then I'm cashing out.
Tyler, what about you? You a big crypto junkie?
Unfortunately not. I have never personally bought or owned crypto. I knew someone in college who was actually a crypto miner at the time, and so he is doing very well. I should have gotten on board with him.
Right. Did you have a chance?
Yeah, I did. And I didn't understand it and I didn't get into it.
It's always that way, isn't it? Well, that was fun. We have a lot to cover, so I want to get right to the headlines. In the headlines, I pick a recent article on our topic to discuss. Today, the topic is the crypto comeback, and I picked a New York Times article from a few weeks ago titled, Bitcoin Hits Record High, Completing a Stunning Comeback. And it's about how Bitcoin hit a record high of more than $69,000, a remarkable comeback for the volatile cryptocurrency after its value plunged in 22 amid the market meltdown. So, my question that I want us to discuss here, what are the biggest reasons Bitcoin is now at or near all-time highs?
I think it's a couple main reasons. I think the biggest is that Bitcoin ETFs were approved back in January, and that really created renewed investor optimism. They have had a very successful first couple months, a lot of interest, and that has definitely bumped up interest in the asset overall.
And you don't need to spend $69,000 to buy one Bitcoin.
The other thing you have to think about is that, you know, Bitcoin is like the id of finance. There are no fundamentals, no investing thesis. It's just like it's urges and greed and FOMO. And Bitcoin tracks how the rest of the stock market is doing. And right now, the S&P, NASDAQ, Dow Jones, they're also at all-time highs. So it kind of makes sense that, you know, as those stocks have recovered, Bitcoin is also doing very well.
Though a lot of cryptos have fallen by the wayside, and even during the meltdown, Bitcoin was the most stable in terms of retaining its value, no?
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, it went from like 60-something thousand to like below 30,000 at one point, I think.
I think it hit 22.
Yeah. So it certainly didn't go to zero, but in terms of percentages, it was pretty brutal for a while.
Brutal. Do you think regulators are going to approve other cryptocurrencies for ETFs?
So the SEC is considering applications for Ethereum, which would be the second largest crypto by market cap. The decision is expected in May, but it's likely not going to pass then just due to the inherent technicalities of how Ethereum was built versus Bitcoin. And also Bitcoin is used more as an investment vehicle versus Ethereum is used more for transactions. So they're just very different assets.
Okay. But Bitcoin's going to be, they're going through a process called halving. And maybe someone can explain what is halving and how is that going to impact Bitcoin moving forward?
Yeah. So halving refers to the reward that you get for mining Bitcoin. So mining is the process of verifying transactions on the blockchain. And when Bitcoin was first launched, the reward for every block was 50 Bitcoins. And roughly every 4 years, that gets cut in half because Bitcoin has a fixed supply. There's never going to be more than, I think it's like 21 million Bitcoin. And so it was 50, then it became 25, then it was 12 and a half. And so the reward for mining Bitcoins gets smaller as it also gets more difficult to mine each block.
So does that mean, you know, we've covered this in previous podcast episodes about the unbelievable amount of energy that gets consumed for mining Bitcoin. So when it goes halving, does that mean that it takes twice the amount of energy to mine Bitcoins as it used to?
In a sense, it takes twice as much energy to get the same reward. But, you know, the energy to mine one block doesn't really change. You're just getting less of a reward from that one. So if you're a miner and you're really trying to, you know, get those rewards for mining, then yeah, you're going to expend a lot more energy. But if you're completing like crypto transactions, you're not going to be,
Yeah. I find this fascinating. According to the Energy Information Administration, Bitcoin mining or crypto mining overall actually consumes 2% of all the electricity produced in the United States. Do you guys believe that?
I believe it.
That's a lot.
I think I saw somewhere that it comprises like 3 or 4% of our greenhouse gas emissions. So that tracks.
It just sort of bugs me that we're trying to become a more green place. And we have this new cryptocurrency that appears to be the standard in terms of holding its value. And it's consuming more and more electricity. It, you know, requires dinosaurs.
Okay, but I'm going to be in its defense. A lot of technologies start off very inefficient, but then over time they work to become more efficient, which is what Bitcoin or blockchain overall is trying to do. They are over time becoming more efficient. Over half of it right now, this is also a data point I can't back up at the moment, but over half of it is about uses renewable energy. There's more of a push for renewable energy in it. And like also if you compare it to the banking sector or something, like the traditional banking system uses so much energy.
Right.
You really need to compare it versus, you can of course say that fact and it sounds crazy, but if you compare it to what other industries are using, I don't know if it's fair.
I think, I agree. I just think it is funny that it consumes so much electricity. But you know, if you're talking about banking, there's still a lot of mainframes in play with banks, and those suckers consume a lot of electricity too. That was really fun to talk about what's going to happen with Bitcoin, that it is at an all-time high, and that it's probably because the US regulators enabled the ETFs. I want to move to our next segment for argument's sake. And for argument's sake, we're going to argue nicely about whether there's actual real-world utility value of cryptocurrencies and Bitcoins in particular. So I'm going to take the position that crypto is speculative. It's a speculative investment. It has no intrinsic value beyond what someone is willing to pay for it. So that's different than a traditional stock equity, which is there's, you know, numbers behind what the company does. Whereas with crypto, you buy a crypto coin for $69,000 and you hope someone is willing to give you $70 for it, but it does nothing other than that. So I think that crypto doesn't really have a lot of value. What do you guys think?
Well, I think first I would say crypto is a huge bucket, right? That covers Bitcoin, Ethereum, Ether, stable coins, CBDCs, right? It's painting with a really broad brush to just say that all of it is useless, right?
So maybe just Bitcoin is useless.
Yeah. I'd be more willing to give you that one. I think it's difficult to come up with a lot of real world use cases for Bitcoin. But, you know, there are absolutely instances in the back end where blockchain technology can be really useful. Right. JP Morgan has the Onyx blockchain and they complete, you know, settlements and transactions and stuff. Swift is working on a CBDC platform that would, you know, facilitate CBDCs from different countries. There are applications for things like smart contracts that automatically execute functions based on certain parameters. And then, you know, crypto themselves, things like remittances and cross-border payments are absolutely improved by blockchain technology.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'd say there's a lot of use for crypto overall and blockchain technology in the payment sector, like remittances and B2B payments, like Tyler said.
Are B2B payments really ready for it, though? I mean, there's a lot of B2B payments that are still on paper checks.
I'd say for smaller businesses, no, they're not ready for that. Maybe some of the large corporations are, but yes, you're correct that we have a while to go before businesses and consumers are going to adopt it. But in theory, they can bring a ton of benefits to payments. They solve a lot of pain points. They're immediate. They are no cost to the sender or the recipient. They're very secure. You can trace them where the money has gone and where it's going to. There's a lot of inherent benefits to the technology.
So you guys are going to argue that crypto overall has real value, but maybe not in today's present day?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, I would too. I think to just write off crypto as a speculative investment is way too broad of a statement. I think we have a long way to go before CBDCs are going to be used publicly or stablecoins are going to be used as payments. But they definitely, I think, have a future. I think it's just going to take a lot longer to get there than some people once thought.
They have like credit cards that are crypto-based, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of crypto cards that are run on Visa and MasterCard.
Where do they get the value or what your credit limit is changes with those cards?
It depends on the card. A lot of the cards that you see today are basically like crypto rewards cards, right? So you can like earn a 100th of a Bitcoin for every transaction, right?
Or so you're not using your crypto dollars, as it were.
There are some that indirectly, they will liquidate your holdings and then send like dollars to settle the transaction. But these cards aren't, like if I had a crypto card and I swipe it at a retailer, I'm not sending them Bitcoin.
Right.
Whoever's issuing the card is converting them into dollars and moving them that way.
I mean, given the speculative nature of the market, that's risky in the credit card business, no?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've definitely had very small adoption so far. But in addition to credit cards, there's also like PayPal investing in crypto payments and Stripe. And most of the really big payment names are all doing it. Like PayPal just launched a proprietary stablecoin last August. They've not released numbers on it. It does seem like low adoption, but they're really setting it up to be used for remittances and other payment transactions like that.
Are they targeting the coin to the dollar?
Yes. That one is pegged to the US dollar. So it's not used for investment purposes. It's really for payments.
All right.
But something that I wanted to say earlier, you know, we're talking about like the crypto renaissance.
Right.
It's true that like the price of Bitcoin and Ether and things has gone up a lot. But in terms of like the crypto ecosystem, it's still really hurting. Like, you know, in 2021, there was $20.6 billion in VC funding for crypto startups.
Yeah.
In 2022, there was $37.7 billion. Last year, there was $5.8 billion.
Right. So it all went to AI now.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually.
Exactly. So, you know, it's very easy on one level to say that like crypto has recovered. But I mean, the industry, it's still not banked. You know, after Silvergate collapsed, I think you'd be hard pressed to find a bank that's going to really work deeply with crypto in the US. So, you know, I would put an asterisk next to Renaissance.
And, you know, after like in the beginning of 2020 and 2021, there were all these new crypto coins hitting the market, like speculative coins. FTX had their own crypto coin, which they did shenanigans with. Are there new coins coming out?
There are new ones.
I'm sure there are.
There are new ones every single day, I'm pretty sure. Those are definitely, I would discuss most of those in a fully different category than Bitcoin and even Ethereum. Those are ones we're not going to see random coins and ETFs anytime soon. It's definitely a very different category. It's very speculative. But I do think blockchain, and I will go to say Ethereum, is in its own category.
Right. I mean, I always think of blockchain as a technology, right? Like it's something that banks are like Chase are leveraging the technology that sort of underscores crypto, but that they use it just to facilitate transactions, their own transactions. Is that?
Yeah.
That's how it works?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Most banks are already using blockchain technology in some way on the back end for like interbank transfers and things of that nature. And we don't even realize it.
Well, this has been a fantastic, for argument's sake, we almost argued a lot. I started off saying that Bitcoin in particular, but cryptocurrencies in general, have no real world utility value. I think you guys successfully argued that they do have utility value, but that maybe today they don't have as much as they might have in the future. I'm not sure. I'm going to still stick with my Bitcoin argument that the only reason people buy Bitcoin is because they think someone else is going to pay more for it in the future. And that's different than buying any other kind of equity. I want to thank everyone for listening to the Banking and Payment Show, an eMarketer podcast made possible today by Walmart Connect. I also want to thank our editor, Victoria. Tomorrow, be sure to listen to another episode of Reimagining Retail with host Sarah Lebo. Bye, Tyler.
See ya. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming, Grace. A lot of fun. Thank you for coming.
Yes, thank you.
And we'll see you all soon. Thank you very much.